Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Ritalin when we come back. Well, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack is taxed at 43%. And the tax on a fifth of Jack Daniel's whiskey is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, to prepare, or to deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that they have to buy the ingredients to make and then prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it? Why is it that the government gets paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Well, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. That number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, tax and status is available on compact disc. That's our home school. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget it. All right, we've been talking about Ritalin, and last time we opened up a report that came from a couple by the name of, see if I can get their name here, Lawrence and Kelly Smith. And then Lawrence and Kelly Smith have a website. And on the website, they've headlined, "Our 14-year-old son died from Ritalin use." And back here in the obituary, they have a little part of the story over here that our son died because of this Ritalin, and he gives him the date or the date that he died and the diagnosis from the autopsy. And they tell the story about how they were intimidated into using Ritalin. The school social worker said, "Now, if you don't put your kid on Ritalin, why, we're going to initiate legal action against you and take your kid away from him." I mentioned to you last time that schools can't require ADHD drugs. They can threaten and intimidate, but they can't require it. Now, if you knuckle under to the threats and intimidation, well, then that's on you. If you resist, you know, rape requires resistance. If they're about to rape you, you need to resist. These people didn't resist. They just knuckled under. Oh, okay. Well, we don't want to be sued, and we don't want to be taken into court, and we certainly don't want our child taken away from us. So, okay, you go ahead, and we'll give you whatever medication you tell us. And then when the kid dies, it's nobody's fault but the parents. After all, they're the ones that ordered it. They're the ones that acquiesced to it. They're the ones that said, yeah, we need this. There wasn't any resistance. You know, if a woman was screaming rape after the fact, and then they said, well, have you got any bruises? No. Did you resist? No. Kids, you know, you don't have rape if there's no resistance. When the government is out raping you, if you don't resist, then you have consented. Consent. That's what your government and government agents are after, is your consent. So they threaten you verbally, and then you consent, and then that's the end of the argument. Now, the Smiths went on to say, at no time were my wife and I ever told significant facts regarding the issue of ADHD and the drugs used to treat it. These significant facts withheld from us inevitably would have changed the road that we were headed down by ultimately altering the decisions that we would have made. All right, well, that's good to say now after the kid's dead. Wouldn't it have been better for those people had they said, oh, you want us to give our child this mind-altering drug? Oh, maybe we ought to research this first before we do that. Now, when you want to research something, you can go to Google and you can look up things, you know, like cocaine or Ritalin or morphine. You know, if you just plug that in there, they'll give you a lot of articles and a lot of sources of information. You could have gone to a doctor with a second opinion. You could have had your child looked at by two or three different doctors on two or three different occasions and have him diagnosed. My first wife had gallstones, and she came in one day and she says, well, I've been to the doctor. He says, I got gallstones and we got to cut them out. It's going to cost $6,000. And I said to her at that time, I said, well, why don't you get a second opinion? Why don't you start looking at, well, is there any other alternative to surgery? I mean, after all, cutting your gallbladder out is kind of serious business. Now, she was a nurse, and her mother was a nurse, and they believed in the medical system, you know, like it was God Almighty himself. And so she went down to her mother's, and they had the gallbladder surgery, and it cost $6,000. And when they got all through, she can't digest fat now, and so now she's grossly overweight, and she's had nothing but medical trouble ever since. And there was a solution to those gallstones, and I encouraged her to take advantage of that, but she didn't do that. So now she has to live with the consequences of the gallbladder surgery, which works. There's no doubt about it. When they cut out your gallbladder along with the gallstones, you won't have that gallstone problem again. Now, there's side effects that come from not having a gallbladder. You know, when God put your gallbladder into your body, he didn't put it in there for looks. Nobody ever gets to see their gallbladder. So it was put in there for some function that you and I don't know anything about, and we didn't need to know anything about, and he didn't tell us anything about it. And then we woke up one day and said, you know, I think God put the wrong part in me. I think that gallbladder over there is just a waste of time, effort, and energy. It just builds up gallstones, and I think I'll just get rid of it. Well, okay, but then the machine isn't going to work quite the way it did before. Now, you could do that with your new Ford automobile. You know, your car will run without a back seat. So, you know, if you think that the Ford people made a mistake when they put the back seat in your car, why don't you just take it out and throw it away? The car is going to run anyway. Now, it's not going to be nearly as comfortable for people in the back seat, and it's not going to look as good, won't have as much resale value. There's certain problems that come with driving a car without a back seat, but, you know, it'll run without it. And your body will run without an appendix, a gallbladder, tonsils, adenoids, ears. I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, you can cut off of your body. You can cut off arms and legs and all kinds of things, and it still goes, but it still doesn't run quite as well. So next time when somebody says to you, we need to cut off your breasts, we need to cut something out of you, we need to take this or take that, why don't you do a little research in advance and find out, educate yourself, rather than just believe what the medical gods tell you. That's what these people did. They believed the medical gods, and so they, after the fact, said, you know, if we would have known then what we know now, well, excuse me, if you could learn it now after the fact, couldn't you have learned it then before the fact? They could have, but they were just lazy. Just lazy. Now, we were told that the Drug Enforcement Administration had classified Ritalin as a Schedule II drug comparable to cocaine. Well, isn't that just real special? So it's cocaine. We were not told that Ritalin is also one of the top 10 abused prescription drugs. Okay, so Ritalin is abused as a prescription drug. In fact, it's for sale on the streets here where I live for $5 a pill. At no time were we informed of the unscientific nature of the disorder. Okay, let me pause right there. Hang on a second. You walk into a restaurant. Did you think the manager is going to walk over to you and say, welcome to the ABC restaurant? Let me inform you that half of our staff was made up of sodomites who have AIDS and spit in the salad because they're just mad as hell at everybody that draws breath. Kids, honest to God, do you believe that the manager of a restaurant is going to tell you the truth about what goes on back in the kitchen? You know, honest to God, do you believe that the social lady, the teacher, the doctor, the pharmaceutical companies are going to give you this kind of information up front so that you can make an intelligent and informed decision? Honest to God, do you believe when you walk onto a car lot that the car salesman, the used car salesman, is going to tell you the truth about the car that you're looking at? You know, I think Americans have become so naive that they're now suffering from the terminal stupids. Absolute terminal stupids. He says, at no time were we informed of the unscientific nature of the disorder. Well, now he knows about the unscientific nature of the disorder after his kid's dead. After he got off of his dead ass and he went and looked it up. How about abused prescription drugs? He could have found that out by plugging into Google, couldn't he, on the internet? Now, I'm taking the time, effort, and energy to inform you, the listening public out there that listen to this program, and say, well, let me tell you what these people didn't know. I'm very grateful to you, Mr. Smith, Lawrence and Kelly Smith. You know, your article, you know, is very important to helping somebody else avoid the tragedy that occurred to you. But this tragedy didn't have to occur to you if you would have taken the appropriate and intelligent steps that parents ought to take before they submit their children for gallbladder surgery or a Ritalin therapy or some other medical monstrosity. He went on to say, he said, we were not told that there was widespread controversy among the medical establishment in regards to the validity of the disorder. Furthermore, we were not provided with information involving the dangers of using Ritalin as treatment for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And one of these dangers includes the fact that Ritalin causes constriction of veins and arteries, causing the heart to work overtime and inevitably leading to damage to the organ itself. All right, now, kids, I'm giving you this information. Ritalin, like Vioxx, causes heart trouble. And the reason that children can get away with it is because children have stronger hearts. If you gave this Ritalin to 65-year-old people, it'd kill them in short order. But you know, you give it to young people. And here's another little factor that I learned from my drug student. I got a student who's a druggist. He is just a wealth of information. And he went to drug school. So he goes to college and he goes to the drug school and they come out and they tell him, you know, certain information. You know, druggists are privy to this kind of information. If you were to ask your druggist, what is this Ritalin? If he was honest, he would say it's cocaine. That's what my drug student told me. He said, well, that's cocaine. Now, of course, they don't just give you cocaine. See, when you're buying cocaine down on the street corner, they just give you cocaine. This stuff here, it's cocaine, but it's got some other stuff put in it. Maybe they put some vitamin B12 or vitamin D in it, see? I don't know what they're putting in it. But the basic ingredient to this Ritalin over here is cocaine. And he said, when they test these drugs, they go to the colleges and universities. See, after they get through with the lab tests and figure out how much of this stuff it takes to kill a rat, then they tone it down and say, okay, well, now we can give this much to people. They don't give this to the average Joe Sixpack. They give it to young, virile college students. They pay these college students a certain amount of money to try this stuff. And the college student, he comes over and he tries it. Then when they actually go out and put it on the market, they give it to young kids, they give it to young, healthy college students, and then they give it to old people and all the rest of us. And they don't test this stuff and say, well, we can't give as much of this to 60-year-old kids as we would to a 20-year-old man. Now, keep in mind that these children, you know, when they start them out on this stuff, now they're starting them out at age 2. And what's this kid weigh, 20 pounds? What's the dosage for a 20-pound 2-year-old, you know, based upon body weight versus a 200-pound linebacker with the college football team? Because they tested the stuff on the 200-pound college kid, and then they're going to give it to the 2-year-old. What does it do to old people, you know, who are 65, 70, or 80 years old when they test these drugs? So let's learn a lesson over here. I mean, here's a guy that's crying in his beer, telling us, oh, my God, if I would have known this. They didn't tell us this, and they didn't tell us that. And now that my kid is dead, now I found all this stuff out after the fact. Now I want to tell you. Well, it's a good thing that he wants to tell us. I mean, he could keep it to himself, shut up, and then let you kill your kid like he did his. And we weren't made aware of the large number of children's deaths that have been linked with these types of drugs used as treatment. Honest to God, do you think that the social worker there at the school or the school nurse is going to say, and by the way, thousands of children have died over the last 30 years, just like this 14-year-old kid using the Ritalin, but, you know, millions of kids are on it, so if a few thousand die, it's no big deal. Let me just test this for a minute. Let's take 3,000, because I don't know how many thousand have died. They just used the number thousands. So we don't know if it's 2,000s, plural, or if it's 200,000s. See, we don't know that. I wish they had told us. But, you know, they always tend to exaggerate. So anytime when somebody is trying to sell you something and they say thousands of children have died from Ritalin, well, they're trying to overstate their case. And so the minimum in thousands would be 2,000. So I'm going to put 2,000 in here. And we know that we got 5 million children on Ritalin here in the United States, 12% of the boys, 12% of 50 million. So then we came up with about 5 million. Remember that? So I'm going to divide that 5 million. And it comes 0.0004%. You see that 4 is over there, 3 zeros, that's 4 out of 10,000. They give Ritalin to 10,000 kids and 4 of them die. So, you know, it's really inconsequential when you get down statistically. The number of people that die from the use of Ritalin at only 4 out of 10,000 is inconsequential. But if it's your kid that is the fourth kid out of 10,000 that dies, it is a god-awful tragedy. I can't think of anything worse than having a child die. I would rather die than have my child die. Of course, that's maybe just me, but that's the way I am. I just can't imagine my kid dying. That's why I never gave my children vaccinations. I was aware of the risks to vaccination. And when the school nurse called and threatened and intimidated and tried to cajole and convince me that I ought to do it, I said, now listen, lady, thanks for calling, but if this is going to pose a problem, I'll keep my kid home. But if you make a mistake and shoot my kid up with snake venom and monkey pus next Wednesday, you can rest assured that litigation will surely follow. And notice they always try to get your consent. I mean, they send a letter home and say, sign here. And that's what happened with the Kellys over here. See, they didn't knuckle under right away. They didn't just run out and say, well, give my kid Ritalin. It was after a number of approaches on the part of the school officials that said, how come you don't have your kid on Ritalin yet, that they threatened them. So again, it's up to you, parents. You know, if you're not interested, if you're too damn lazy to go out and get the facts and figures and find out whether this is good for your kid or not, you got to remember that out of 10,000 children that are taking Ritalin, only 4 of them are going to die, and your chances of ever meeting those 4 people are just slim and none until somebody like me comes along and rehearses it in your ear. Same thing with autism. Autism is caused by the mercury that's in these vaccines. And out in California, just to demonstrate that fact, out in California, they got uppity. Those Californians are kind of crazies out there, you know. And so they barred all vaccines out there that contain this thimerosal. And the autism rate in California dropped by half in 1 year. Isn't that just, hey, doesn't that just grab you? And of course, the medical establishment for years has denied that the thimerosal in the vaccines has anything to do with autism. Same thing in Japan. You know, they up the time frame from 2 months to 2 years in vaccinating children, cut their sudden infant death syndrome, the SIDS death rate, by half. Come on, kids, time to wake up. Now, it is true that autism doesn't happen to very many children. I mean, they're vaccinating 50 million kids, and so, you know, a few thousand of them end up with autism. You know, it's just the cost of doing business, the way the breaks of the game going in. And you can't get any compensation either, because your Congress has enacted legislation to protect the pharmaceutical companies from lawsuits. So, you know, let the buyer beware. It's called caveat emptor. You better beware before you buy that stuff, because once you give your consent and they shoot your kid up and he develops autism or he dies suddenly, that's on you. That's not the fault of the doctors, not the fault of the pharmaceutical companies. You can forget about compensation and getting sued. You can sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. Now, while Matthew was taking Ritalin, at no time were we informed of any test, echocardiogram, MRI. These types of tests could have detected the damage done to his heart. These tests were not considered standard in monitoring treatment of ADHD, and they were usually never administered to children. Sadly, death is inevitable without the possibility of detection. I want to ask every parent to ask themselves these important questions. How different would our decision be if information was withheld from you? And how different would your decision be if you received only distorted data? Well, there you are. That's right. These people received distorted data, and they did not receive important information. But then they didn't go out to get the important information either. So, years ago, and I want to point this out, 88% of Americans are in favor of vaccines, vaccinations, and the vaccination concept. 12% are opposed to it or are ambivalent, don't know and don't care, but they're not into it and don't want it, but probably could be convinced. A very small minority of people here in America are actually informed and then opposed to vaccines and vaccination based upon hard evidence. Not very many of us have any hard evidence. Now, I suggest to people, you know, I don't know if vaccines and vaccination is good for you or not. Hell, you know, you're an adult. You can figure out for yourself whether or not you should have your gallbladder cut out or not, or whether you should have your lung cut out because you've got lung cancer. Now, I think, though, that if you had more information, you might make a different decision. You might come up with a better conclusion with more information. Now, remember, I showed you yesterday that the United Nations went through 400 pediatricians, and not a single one of these 400 pediatricians went through the MRI or any of these tests that they're supposed to go through when you're putting somebody on long-term Ritalin use. There's a protocol that has about 10 or 12 items that you're supposed to check, double-check, and monitor. But again, you know, look at it from the doctor's point of view. The doctor says, my God, you know, I'd have to check 10,000 kids with all of this protocol. Then there's only four of them going to die anyway. And I don't have to check the other 9,996 kids at all because they're not going to die. So it's one of those things that it's not something that's going to kill. And it could be that it's more than 2,000. Hell, it could be 200,000. I don't know what the numbers are. Now, that I don't have for you, and I apologize, but I can only report what I've got in front of me, and that number isn't in here. They use the number thousands of children have died from Ritalin use. Okay, well, that's the opponents of Ritalin. And the people that are positive on Ritalin, they don't tell you anything about how many kids have died. So neither side is giving us all of the facts on how many died. But it's a bunch, and it's a potential, and it's there. But that's not the only reason for not using Ritalin. There's 35 other side effects besides death. Death is number 36. I already read to you the other 35 side effects. Now, it's like reading in the Reader's Digest. You look at this ad for this drug, and then you flip the page, and in fine print, you get your 10-power contract loop out, and you read the side effects over there. Then ask yourself, would anybody in his right mind put something in his mouth and ingest something that's going to do those 20 or 30 things to him? I find that hard to believe, but you know, evidently you people don't look at the side effects to the drugs that you're taking. He goes on to say, I myself know that our families and Matthew's outcome would have been quite different had we received all information. If I had known certain facts, I would have acted differently, and my son would be alive today. This I'm sure of. Mr. and Mrs. Kelly, or Mr. and Mrs. Smith, your kid would be alive today if you'd have got off your dead ass and did the research before the fact. And I'm going to tell all the rest of you the same thing. If you get off your dead ass and you go over there and you do the research, then you will be informed, and then you won't make that same mistake. It's just laziness. That's what it boils down to. Don't blame it on the doctor. Don't blame it on social lady. Don't blame it on the school nurse or on the teacher or on the pharmaceutical company. You know, you've got the ultimate lever. You've got the ownership of the kid. You've got the primary custody over there. And if you did the research, if you looked into it, had you cared enough? After the fact, these people say, boy, now I'm here to warn you, and I wouldn't let that happen to me again. Well, of course not. You know, if you're driving your car down the road and there's a sign that says slow to 35 and you speed up to 50 and you hit that turn and you roll off the road over there and tear your car up and put yourself in the hospital for 30 days, of course the next time you come to that turn, you'll slow to 35. Of course the next time that won't happen to you. But you know, if you would have paid attention to the sign the first time, it wouldn't have happened to you either. That's the bottom line. And so, you know, a lot of times people, you know, they get to be kind of crybabies. Oh, I didn't know. And that's the excuse that people use. Gee, I didn't know. Wait until you get into the judgment and you say, yeah, I didn't know. And then see what that gets you. And there's an old adage here in law that says ignorance of the law is no excuse. It may be an affirmative defense, but it's not an excuse. And just because you didn't know what pork does to you, or you didn't know what fat does to you, you don't know about trans fats, you don't know about insulin, you don't know about diabetes, isn't going to take the penalty away from you. So let's wake up, kids. It's time to smell the coffee. Now, informed consent, which states in part, a person's agreement to allow something to happen, such as surgery, that is based on full disclosure of the facts needed to make the decision intelligently. For example, knowledge of risks involved, alternatives, and the probable risks against the probable benefits. Well, of course. Now walk into a used car dealer and listen to the used car dealer's spiel. He's selling you a car, and he's lying through his teeth, and you know he's lying through his teeth. I mean, unless you're brain dead. So, you know, it's up to you to have your mechanic come and listen to the car. Or it's up to you to have somebody that knows something about autos. You know, when I go to buy a car or something like that, I always take one of the local hillbillies over here. You know, the guy, the mechanic over at the DX station. Or I take the car over and I say, hey, take us out for a test drive, Mr. DX man, and tell me what you think of it. And he'll take it out for a test drive and come back. And he'll say, well, there's this and that and another thing. It's about five or six things that are wrong with it. I'm not a mechanic. I'm not an expert. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. If the doctor said, hey, Gordon, your kid needs Ritalin, I'd say, well, I don't know. Let me go get a second or third opinion. When somebody comes in here and says, okay, here's my bid on remodeling your kitchen, I usually get two or three extra bids so that I can compare prices and talk to other contractors and get their opinions of what they think and their view and their input to it. And then when I've got more information over here, then I can make a better, more informed decision. These people made a decision. And then after the fact, when it turned out bad, their excuse is, well, we didn't know, we didn't know, we didn't know. And I'd almost like to say, well, you got your just desserts, except that the poor kid that's 14 years old is dead. The bright spot is, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, your son is coming up in the second resurrection. We're not dealing with random chance. We're not talking about the miracle of random selection here. There's a judgment coming. There's a millennium coming. There's a second life for your son. That 14-year-old boy will come up in that resurrection, live for 100 years. He'll get his opportunity at that time for salvation. Unfortunately, though, that's 1,000 years from now. And the kid's going to languish and molder in his grave for 1,000 years, and he missed his opportunity, and he had his life cut short for the greedy, the benefit, and the greed of the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies. And I think that's a tragedy. But let's not fail to put responsibility where it belongs, and that's right there with the parents. Now, let me give you a reminder here, and that reminder is that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Ritalin. I guess you can tell by my comments that I'm not really ecstatic about Ritalin, but I want to emphasize that I'm not opposed to it. You know, if that's what you want and that's what you think you need and that's good for your kid, you know, I think free choice is more important than my one-sided opinion. And I don't think that I should come out here and take Ritalin away from all of you good folks out there that are giving it to your kid, and you think it's good and you believe in it and you want your kid to have it. And by golly, I think you should have that right to choose. I get that idea from God himself in Deuteronomy 30 when he said, now I command you this day to choose, you know. First of all, he ordered us. He says, I demand, I command you to choose life. and choose right over wrong. But, you know, you got to have the opportunity and the right and et cetera to choose wrong and to choose death. And so we have that opportunity. And I wouldn't want to take that away from you, but I think that you ought to have full disclosure. And that's what Mr. and Mrs. Smith are saying here. You know, if we would have had full disclosure, we would have made a different choice. And I think that if you parents out there have full disclosure, I think you too will make a different choice. I can't believe anybody would give his kid Ritalin after he gets the facts on Ritalin, just from what I've told you so far. I mean, you know, if what I'm telling you is true, I could be lying to you, but then why don't you go check it out and find out if there's anybody else out there that holds these same views? I mean, I don't think I'm the only guy. Now, next time, I got a book here called Ritalin Nation. In fact, I won't wait till next time. I'm going to tell you about it right now. I read the book. It is so damn dull, boring, and uninteresting, I wouldn't review it on the air. That's how bad this book is. But the book does have all the facts and figures and the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence that you have to make an informed decision. So here's the name of the book. It's called Ritalin Nation. It's spelled R-I-T-A-L-I-N, Ritalin Nation. And it's written by Richard DeGrampry. I guess it's DeGrampry. It's spelled capital D-E, capital G-R-A-N-D-P-R-E, Ph.D. So you know he's smart because he's a Ph.D. And that means piled higher and deeper. Ph.D., piled higher and deeper. Now, I don't want to degrade the fellow because he's probably a pretty smart guy, and he's done a hell of a nice job writing this book, and I'm going to recommend the book. It's not the only source of information on Ritalin. It's not the first and last word on Ritalin, and you people can probably find 15 other books out there. But it was written in 1999, copyrighted in 2000, and put out by who? Let's see, printed in USA and Library of Congress number, and I don't think it says on here who printed it. Oh, yeah, W.W. Norton and Company, New York and London. W.W. Norton and Company. I imagine you can go to any bookstore, Barnes & Noble, you know, or Amazon or somebody like that, and pick up the book. How many pages we got here? Probably, you know, 280 pages with the index. You know, a little under 300 pages. Easy reading. It's just a little dull and uninteresting. The guy isn't the greatest writer in the world, but he's got good facts and figures and tells you the story about Ritalin in greater detail than I'm doing here and just, you know, reviewing the subject matter. And when you get through with the book and make an informed decision, if you think Ritalin's still good, go get it. Get after it. I wouldn't fail to take Ritalin based upon thousands of people dying from its use. You know, thousands of people die every year using automobiles, and I'm not recommending that you quit driving. Hell, I'm driving. I'm out here driving away with my automobiles knowing that 40, 50,000 people a year get killed in automobiles. I know automobiles are dangerous. I know there's crazies out on the road that are drunk and are probably going to run into me and kill me on my next trip to Springfield. But that doesn't mean that we ought not to use automobiles, and that doesn't mean that you ought not to use Ritalin, at least not on those grounds. I mean, there's 15 other reasons why you might want to reconsider using this Ritalin, but not on the death thing. Now, these people here, the Smiths, are really bummed out because their kid died from the Ritalin. Now, their kid could have been taking the Ritalin. He would have survived had they done the protocol. So write this one down. There's about 12 protocols that the doctor is supposed to go through to check your kid out to make sure this doesn't happen. So let's suppose your kid is on Ritalin, and you're going to keep your kid on Ritalin. If he's going to be on this Ritalin for any extended period of time, I don't know how long, 6 months, a year, something like that, then every year or every 6 months, and the protocol is here in the book. You take your kid in, and they don't just twirl a pencil around three times and ask him how he's sleeping or his insomnia is. They actually give him some blood tests, and they actually do an electrocardiogram, and they take a look at this kid. And they make an evaluation. They say, hey, this kid over here, you've got to take him off this Ritalin. It's screwing up his heart. It's going to kill him. Or something else. But at least, remember this, the United Nations, now they took a look at 400 pediatricians. None of them go through the protocol, which they're supposed to do, and they don't do. So that's negligence on the part of the doctors. So let's not make it doubly deadly by having negligence on the part of the parents. Now he goes on to say that the violation of parents' rights is when they are not told of the unscientific nature of so-called disorders such as ADHD or the risks of the treatments involving drugs like Ritalin, and they certainly are not told of alternatives to their child's behavior such as undiagnosed allergies or food sensitivities, which could manifest with the symptoms of what psychiatry calls ADHD, which is exactly right. I mean, your kid may not have ADHD. He may have allergies. He may have something else that's causing these problems. That's the bottom line. But get this. The guy says the violation of parents' rights. Well, obviously, this guy doesn't have much legal training. Since when do you have a right to know something? Where in the Constitution does it say that you have a right to be informed about the adverse effects of Ritalin? You know, I hear this kind of crap all the time, you know, from people who say, well, I've got these rights, and they violated my rights, and I've got these rights, and you know about my rights, and they don't honor my rights. Let me tell you something about rights. Go look it up in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. Rights are an aggregate of both tangible and intangibles. You may have a right to an automobile, and you may actually have physical possession of the automobile or the horse or something else, or you may have a right to the use of the automobile, even though you're not in possession of it. You may have a right to some knowledge or information based upon a contract. And in the contract, it says that there's certain information you have a right to. And when you signed that W-4 form with your employer, you made a statement. You made an agreement with the Internal Revenue Service, and the Internal Revenue Service has a right from you to receive a 1040 form every year that gives 83 pieces of information. Yeah, there are some cases where there are rights to information that are due you. You have a right to certain information under the Freedom of Information Act. I don't deny that. But ladies and gentlemen, this guy does not have any right to this information from his doctor, or any right to any specific information from the school nurse or social lady or anybody else concerning a Ritalin. You know, we all have a duty to inform ourselves. You know, what if some guy gets killed over in Iraq? He says, well, the Army didn't inform me. They didn't tell me that I could get killed over here in this war, and I'm going to sue him for wrongful death. That's just poppycock. And there's some things in life that we ought to know that you and I have the duty or the obligation to go search out. You know, you go buy a house, and maybe the house is full of termites. And did you think for a minute here that the real estate broker has some duty to inform you that this house has termites? In some jurisdictions, the answer to that is yes. In California, you got to have a termite inspection. But you know, there's 49 other states out here, and not every state requires that. And so it's up to you to find out whether or not there's termites in this house. It's up to you to do the research on this. It's up to you to inform yourselves. I don't know how many times people call here at the law school and they say, well, they didn't tell me this. I didn't know. Everybody's excuse is, I didn't know. That's what leads me to believe that Americans are suffering from the terminal stupids. I didn't know. As if I don't know something and something goes wrong, some mystical entity is going to come in and make everything right. It's kind of like Granny, who's going to come out and kiss your knee and make it all better. Remember when you were a little kid and you fell down and Granny kissed your knee, kissed your elbow? That's what my Granny did. And every time I had a hurt, she'd kiss it and make it all better. And then you grow up and you find out that you get hurt and there ain't no Granny out there to kiss it and make it all better. And then you got to live with the results that come from it. So before you have to live with these results, let's wake up and smell the coffee. You don't have any right to this knowledge or information. It's up to you to go get it. And the doctor doesn't have any duty to disclose it. And he won't. Sometimes you got to dig it out of him. You know, if I ask somebody a question and he's evasive and won't answer the question, he just answered it for me. What do you think of this, Ritalin, Doc? Would you give it to your kid? If the guy kind of prevaricates and he says, well, it kind of depends on the circumstances. The answer is, hell no, I wouldn't give it to my kid. That's what the doc is trying to tell you. But he doesn't want to say that because it's going to cost him a sale. Ask the used car salesman, hey, would you buy this car? Well, you know, in my circumstance, this isn't the car for me. That means, hell no, I wouldn't buy that car. And then I'll tell you, hell no, you ought not to buy it either. That's how simple that is. A lot of times you can pick up vibes, you know, from people, you know. If the guy says, you bet, I'd buy that car in a heartbeat. I've already got a car just like it. I've got a pickup just like that. That's why I have a four-wheel drive, and that's why I recommend four-wheel drive, or that's why I recommend this or that or something else. Now, this guy goes on. He says, here are some facts that are being withheld from parents that could possibly alter their life decisions and outcomes. Did you know that schools receive additional money from state and federal government for every child labeled and drugged? Oh! Now, that sends you a little signal. Did you know that the school receives additional money from the government for every child that's labeled and drugged? This clearly demonstrates a possible financial incentive. Oh, isn't this guy just marvelous? This clearly demonstrates a possible. Let me clear that up. Boys and girls, that's not possible. That's the wrong word. Listen to this. This clearly demonstrates an absolute financial incentive for the school. Look, I'm the principal of the school, and the government's going to pay me $50 for every kid that I got on Ritalin in my school. I got 1,000 kids in my school. As soon as I get 100 of them on Ritalin, the school gets an extra $5,000. There's all kinds of government incentives. Now, why would your government want... You know, just carry this out to its logical conclusion. Why would the government, state, local, federal, want to drug all the children of America and pay tax dollars? These are your tax dollars being used to give incentives to the school to coerce you into using Ritalin on your kid. Why would they want to do that? Is it because they want to meld America into the New World Order and they don't want anybody to resist? Drug addicts don't resist. Okay. And so now you know. The school gets paid an incentive. They get paid a bonus for every kid that they get labeled. So if you were wondering why Social Lady was badgering these people about getting their kid drugged up, same thing is true with your vaccination. Same thing's true with the police department taking your fingerprints and booking you in. They get paid $14 by the NCBI, something or other, NACB, some agency of the FBI. So they arrest you and they take you into the local jail over here. There's no law that requires you to be fingerprinted or booked, but they do it. Because they get paid $14 for it. It's the National Identification System. All right, so this clearly demonstrates an absolute financial incentive for schools to label and drug children. It also backs up the alarming rise and increase in the labeling and drugging that has taken place in the last decade within our schools. So if you want to know why it is so many kids in America are diagnosed with ADHD and why so few in China, it's because in the United States, we pay to have them diagnosed that way. And we pay with your money. So here's the real bottom line. Mr. and Mrs. Smith are paying their taxes. And the government takes their taxes and then goes to Social Lady and says, now, con these people into getting their kid labeled with ADHD so that we can get their kid drugged so that their kid doesn't pose any threat to us when we go to install this new world order. And so the Social Lady's getting paid by the government, and the teacher's getting paid by the government. And it's your tax dollars that they're using to coerce you into getting your kid on ADHD drugs, which benefits the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies, which in turn pay more taxes, which then gives the Social Lady and the government more money to give more incentives to get more kids on ADHD. That's why the ultimate end of this is that every kid in America is going to be on Ritalin. That's the ultimate end of the policy. You got a policy in place. And unless you resist it, then that's the ultimate end of it. Now, did you know that parents receiving welfare money from the government can get additional funds for every child that they have labeled and drugged? All right, so now you're on welfare. And Social Lady comes along and says, oh, if your kid is handicapped or disabled, why, you can get more money. Well, rest assured that welfare mom is going to do everything in her power to get this kid branded as being defective or deficient. Look at the incentives that we're putting out here. In this way, many lower socioeconomic parents, many times single mothers, are reeled into the drugging by these financial incentives waved in front of them in hard times, making lifestyle changes possible. And did you know that by labeling your child with ADHD, you're actually labeling them with a mental illness listed in the DSM-4, the Unscientific Billing Bible for Psychiatry? Well, that's just real nice to have your kid branded as being mentally deficient. Now, did you know that a child taking a psychostimulant drug like Ritalin after the age of 12 is ineligible for military service? Now, you don't want to brag about that too much. I mean, we might use that to stay out of the Army. After age 12. I didn't know that. I'm going to put a great big star by that one. So I can tell my students over here, put your kid on Ritalin when he's 14 years old. I'll keep him out of the Army. Now, did you know that the subjective checklists that are being used as criteria for diagnosis are very similar to the checklists used to determine gifted and talented children? These two checklists are almost identical. So, you know, ladies and gentlemen, your kid may not be mentally deficient. He may be a genius. Did you ever stop and think about that? And so we're going to drug this genius over here to keep him calmed down. I remember when I was in school. The school was so damn boring, you know, that it just taxed me. I hated school. Wasted my time. In fact, I got out of school just as soon as I was physically able to get the hell out of there. Now, the Drug Enforcement Administration clearly states in their report on Ritalin that contrary to popular belief, stimulants like Ritalin will affect normal children and adults in the same manner that they affect ADHD children. Behavioral or attentional improvements with Ritalin, therefore, is not diagnostic of ADHD. This statement thoroughly contradicts what is being told to many parents by many professionals that have a vested stake in the diagnosis itself. So the Smiths are saying, oh my God, the doctor lied to me. It's like buying a car and the car turns out to be a lemon. Oh my God, the used car salesman lied to me. Well, welcome to reality. The DEA further states that of particular concern is that most of the ADHD literature prepared for public consumption and by CHADD and other groups and available to parents does not address the abuse potential or actual abuse of Ritalin. Instead, Ritalin, usually referred to as Ritalin by these groups, is routinely portrayed as a benign, mild substance that is not associated with abuse or serious side effects. In reality, however, there is an abundance of scientific literature which indicates that Ritalin shares the same abuse potential as other Schedule II stimulants such as cocaine, marijuana, and heroin. Okay, now that comes from the DEA, not your government tax dollars at work telling you, and that this stuff is deadly stuff. This is heavy duty drugs. This is the same kind of stuff that you're encouraging your children to avoid out on the school ground. Oh, my God, don't smoke marijuana. Don't smoke cigarettes. Don't drink alcohol. But here, let me give you some Ritalin, son. I mean, have we parents taken leave of our senses? You're trying to teach your kid to stay off of these drugs, stay off of cocaine, stay off of heroin, stay off of marijuana. Oh, but let me give you your prescription cocaine from the doctor, son, because you're mentally unbalanced. Now, just the thing your kid needed. You know, when I used to be 12 years old, you know, I just can't imagine my parents coming, hey, we got to give you this drug, son. You're mentally unbalanced. You're crazy. Something wrong with you. Here, let's give you this drug. Talk about self-esteem now. Now, did you know that groups like CHADD and others available to parents are being supported financially by pharmaceutical companies? Hey, did you hear that? These support groups that you go to, like CHADD and others available to parents, are being supported financially by pharmaceutical companies. Hey, that just makes all the sense in the world. It's the same sense as Exxon and Standard Oil and Mobil and the rest of these companies supporting the environmental groups. And that ARCO is the largest contributor to the Sierra Club. And people say, well, why would ARCO, the oil company, want to support the Sierra Club, which is against the oil companies? Competition. And you see, the oil companies went out, and then they financed and they lobbied for legislation so that they could have environmental legislation enacted so that you and I, the little guys down here, couldn't drill an oil well on our own property and become oil people. But the big companies can. In 1930, if I wanted to, I could have gone out here on my farm, drilled a hole in the ground at my expense, and if I found oil, I'd be an oil man. I might be a millionaire. And in fact, there were tens of thousands of Americans who did just that. So there was a time in America when more than half of the oil produced in this country was produced by little companies, little oil companies, not the big majors. Today, there are just a few little oil companies out there, and they ain't too little. And then there's the big majors. And the difference was made when they got the environmental legislation enacted so that if I wanted to drill an oil well today here, it would cost me $1 million to do the environmental impact statement, which obviously I don't have, because if I had $1 million, I wouldn't need to dig the oil well because I'd already be rich, wouldn't I? And if I had $1 million, then I could go do the environmental impact statement, and then in that way, I would already be rich, not already be in the oil business, and that eliminates all you little guys, and all you little guys are the competition for the big guys. So the pharmaceutical companies are out there promoting their product. They're out here promoting chapters and organizations to support the parents of children who have ADHD. And naturally, yeah, you need more of it and keep them on it longer. Just makes all the sense in the world. It makes all the sense in the world for the oil industry to support the environmental groups to keep all the rest of us out of the oil business. And it makes all the sense in the world for the pharmaceutical companies to support the chapters to keep you people hooked on their products so that you keep buying it for your kid and paying six times more than you could buy it for if you bought him cocaine down on the street corner. And we call ourselves educated in this country. I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.